Hey everyone, welcome to Little Victories Podcast. I'm your host, Kathy Brophy, and I'm really glad you're here. The inspiration for this podcast comes from a conversation I had with my dad many years ago. I was going through a rough time in my life, trying to talk to him about it, kind of stuttering over my words. And my dad stopped me mid-sentence and said, "Kat, it's okay. I already know." And I said, "Dad, what do you know?" And he said, "When you love someone, you pay attention." Those words have stuck with me and are, as I said, the inspiration for this podcast to bring regular, ordinary people on, share their stories in the hopes that my listeners, you, may find some takeaways and connections and be able to create little victories in their own lives. Now let's get to it. Hello and welcome. One thing I am coming to understand about myself in doing this podcast is that I love educators and I love telling their stories. I'm here sitting down with my friend and colleague and my principal, Dr. Jamie Chisholm. And for over 10 years, he, myself, and someone else, we'll get to that a little bit later, have been a part of what's called Seminar Day here at Wellesley High School. And in this conversation, Jamie is going to share his adoption story. But before we start, we are going to kind of warm up a little bit, as my guests know that I like to warm up. So my first question for Jamie is, if you had a song that played every time you walked into a room, what would it be?
I don't know why it's choking me up, but Fanfare for the Common Man.
All right. Do you want to say a little bit more? I'm not familiar with that song.
Oh, Fanfare for the Common Man is it's a classical piece of music, and it is... Everybody actually, I think most people know it. It's like, da-na-na, da-na-na, da-da-da.
Okay. I'll probably, when we're done, I might go listen to it,
right,
so I know
there
what it is.
There's no words to it. It's just, but I like the common man part.
Okay. What's your favorite food?
Guiltily... Probably steak. I know I shouldn't eat it so much, but I really like it.
Yes, we like steak in our house, and I have somebody in my family that likes filet mignon, so it's like, woo!
Well, it's not cheap either.
It's not. Okay, another thing I do know about you, Jamie, is that you're an avid runner. Mm-hmm. So, is there a particular run that you will never forget?
It's hard for me not to choose a workout at the Reggie Lewis Center in Roxbury, because it was a 3x2 mile workout on the track. And the track is not my favorite place to run. I much prefer to run in the woods. But the reason this run is maybe my favorite or most memorable run is because it is where I met my wife. Hmm. We met on the track doing a workout.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. Maybe that might be another podcast. We'll see.
Oh, sure.
Okay. What is one of, so you were a former English teacher, but probably always an English teacher, actually, because you
I still teach a class now. Yeah,
okay.
One class, yeah.
So what is one of your favorite children's books, either one that was read to you or one that you read?
I always loved Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, yeah. I like that one, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we ready to dive into this?
Sure.
And like I tell my listeners, kind of as a little, nothing we do is light on this podcast. Everything we do, and one of the things I love around it is the stuff that we talk about are the things that touch us, right? Touch our heart.
Yeah.
In hard ways, and just ways to kind of move through things. So... will you share? Actually, I'll share. So we are connected by adoption because of my family was created by adoption. I know your story, which you're going to share. And then we had a third person that was a part of it that shared his. He was international. He adopted internationally, and he's also an adult adoptee. So we've been doing this together for 3 years. So, how did you come up with the name when we started this maybe 10 years ago, the Adoption Triangle?
Sure. I could take credit for saying we should call it the adoption triangle, but I can't take credit for the term. The term is a term in the kind of sort of adoption social science world, which refers to the three legs of adoption, which of course there's like me, someone who's been adopted, someone like you who's adopted someone, and then there's the third leg, which is someone who has given someone up.
Okay. So, this is I do know the story, and it's a beautiful story, and it really does. I don't think we ever did this without crying.
Probably
So, I
not.
know. So, when and how did you come to learn that you were adopted?
I don't have any consciousness of a time when I didn't know that I was adopted. There were ways that where my parents were always really open about it with me, just that I was adopted, and there was no judgment about it. It was just adopted. And then I had older siblings who sometimes could be mean about it. Well, I remember when there would be a caseworker that would come to visit our house, and my mother would clean up, and my brother would say things like, "Yeah, this is the reason we can't have any sugar cereal anymore, because we got to make things look good for you." So there's a little resentment of it, but it was I never felt over. Like that was too big a thing. It was, but yeah, so I always knew.
And that's when we adopted our two children from birth. The advice that we got from our social workers was adoption should be a part of your language every single day moving forward. So it was a part of our language. So similarly, right? And then how and what people do and what children do with that as they start to ask questions or not ask questions, right? So I guess I'm gonna fast forward a little bit because you had kind of there was a time when you were curious and you did some research and you want to maybe share how that went and what you were able to find out.
So it actually took a while. There was never a point in my life where I wasn't curious. There were different times when I was not interested in looking, and then there were times when it became really important for me to look. And I would guess that probably when my wife and I got married, and we were knew that we at some point we were going to try to have kids, that I was curious enough that I felt like I should know something about my biological family. I should know, even if there's a there are there health risks for my kids, things like that. And I always wanted to sort of I wanted to get to the bottom a little bit of. Listeners can't see it, but my left hand, I have something called Poulin syndrome, where my left hand is smaller than my right hand, and it was webbed when I was born, so I have a birth defect, and so I don't know, I wanted to know, is that something that I might pass on? Not that I wouldn't, but I just wanted to know. And so we started to look, and I did sort of the normal legal things, and I found out that I had to write to the judge in the area where I was adopted. I was adopted in Springfield, Massachusetts, and so I had to establish good judicial cause because adoptions were sealed in Massachusetts when I was born in 1969. So I did the work, and I used my Poulin syndrome as my argument for good judicial cause, why I needed to know my biological information. And I wrote to a judge, and while the judge was very sympathetic, he rejected my claim and did not open my file, and said that it did not constitute good judicial cause. So I was stymied for a number of years. Well, fast forward, I was working here at Wellesley High School, and we had a social worker here who was also adopted, and he came and he was an advocate. He was very active in the community. He ran groups and things like that. And he came to me. He knew my story, and he said, "Hey, I have good news for you." I'm like, "What is it?" And he said, Massachusetts is about to overturn that sealed law, and you're going to be able to get your birth certificate.
Yeah.
And it sort of blew my mind, but he walked me through the process when everything clicked over, and then I applied for my original birth certificate, and I got it.
So I want to ask one question. When you were doing the research earlier and it was denied, were you doing this yourself, or did you get any kind of legal consult on how to do it?
I didn't get any legal consult. There was an organization called TRY, Together, I can't remember what TRY stands for, but it's an organization out of Northampton where I had some connections because I grew up in Western Mass. And they gave me some advice on how to do it, and you know where to look, and who, you know, I had to find the judge and whatever. So, but there wasn't anything legal really. They just showed me the term. So,
you applied. Now you're here at Wellesley High School. You applied and
I got a phone call from my wife on a Friday, and all she said was, "It's here." So. I finished my day.
Yeah.
She didn't open it, and we opened it together. And you know, I saw the name on my my birth certificate, and it just had my birth mother's name. There was no birth father listed.
Okay.
Your listeners won't be surprised at this. The internet is an amazing place.
Yes.
It took me not 2 hours to find a home phone number for the woman listed on my birth certificate. And my wife looked at me and she said, "What are you gonna do?" I said, "I'm gonna call it."
Yeah.
And I don't know why I didn't wait. Don't know why. I was like, well, I pick up the phone. This is what we did this for. So let's do this. So I picked up the phone and I called the number, and a man answered the phone, and I said, you know, can I speak to the woman's name? And he got her, and she picked up the phone, and I said, "Is this so-and-so?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, my name is Jamie Chisholm, and I have reason to believe that you're my birth mother."
Oof.
And I heard a gasp.
Yeah.
Just, and I knew I had her. Mm-hmm. I knew it was her.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued on. I said, "Did you give birth to a baby boy in Springfield, Massachusetts on August 28th, 1969? She said, "Yes, I did."
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
How long were you on the phone after that was disclosed?
It feels like hours that we were on the phone. We talked for a while. The conversation was actually great.
Yeah.
She seemed happy that I had connected with her, and she told me a little bit about the circumstance that she was in grad school, and she wasn't in a deep relationship with that person and wasn't prepared to raise a kid, and you know, that it was a different time in the late 60s for women to be single and pregnant, and that her parents were not approving of it, and that, you know, she made the decision to give me up.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, she told me about her sons. That, and in fact, she had adopted two boys.
Mm.
And she had two boys of her own. So I had four brothers out there that I didn't know about.
Mm.
And at the time, she said, you know, you'll get to meet them. You'll get to know them. And she told me a little about what they're like. And then... And she also gave me my birth father's name.
Yeah, so I'm gonna keep going. And the one thing I did not say is, a part of our seminar, there was usually another person there. My wife was there, and you had someone with you. And I'll let you share who that person was and how that was when you met him for the first time.
So, the other person who was there with us was Norm Christiansen, who is my birth father.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty exhausted after talking to my birth mother that night just processing it with my wife. So I waited till the next day, and then I got on the internet again, and bang, again, I found a number for Norm. And I gave him a call, and his call was different because he was completely shocked. I mean, she was shocked, but he was shocked and said, you know, I said the same thing, you know, do you have a son, whatever. I spoke to this woman and whatever, and he said, can I call you back? He didn't even confirm it right away. He said, can I call you back? Is there a number I could call you back? And I just said, yeah, let's get a number. And I thought, I turned to my wife and I said, he's never going to call me back. I'm never going to hear from this guy again. I'm going to have to decide whether I want to call him again or not. But he did. He called me back. And we set up a time. He was really sort of thrown. And he said, you know, I need a little space to think about this and, you know, whatever. So we set up a time the next day to talk on Sunday. And we talked for a long time on Sunday. And he has four daughters. And told me about my four birth sisters, one of whom he adopted. And then kind of the relationship has sort of taken off from there. We made an appointment to meet up. And we have slowly built a relationship. And he is a part of my life. He knows my kids. He comes, visits, and stays at my house. We go visit him. I know all, I've met all four of my birth sisters. I've met my birth aunts, his sisters. I've been to family gatherings at his family. He's been to ours. He's been to... he was at Thanksgiving dinner with us this year. Like, we've done a lot of things.
And I can say when I met him for the first time and I knew who he was when we sat down with her, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he is definitely your birth father. There was no two ways about it. Yeah. Mannerisms, so much.
Yeah.
It was really cool to see.
Yeah. When I met him the first time, I met him at a restaurant actually here in Wellesley, and I walked into the restaurant and I looked across at, you know, the waiting area where people were waiting, and I immediately knew who it was. Oh, but there he is. And I'd, you know, not seen a picture really of him. You know, there was some stuff online, but it wasn't so clear. But as soon as I saw him, I was like, that's him. That's him.
So there's a moment too, and I don't know if you remember this. My son was maybe 6 or 7, and he was in the building with me, as my kids have been in the building many times, and we were going through the office, and you met him. And I remember you had this moment, and then the next day we connected, and you said to me, when I looked at him, I thought to myself, that was me. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. What about that? Like, what was that moment?
No, there's a kernel of curiosity that grows inside you that you just want to know. Like, you can't help it. And that's, you know, there's lots of stories when you try to find your birth parents, and some of them are not great, and some of them are great, and some of them are somewhere in between. And I don't know what, but he's got a kernel of curiosity in him. And, you know, he wasn't expressing that. There wasn't a look in his eye, right? He's not going to, you know, kind of try to create a moment that wasn't there. But I looked at him and I saw, you know, I remember being, you know, before I knew.
Right.
And being a young kid and just trying to come to terms with, what does it mean to be adopted? Because there's all these feelings around, I mean, my God, you know, he loves you and Marie. And, you know, he's got a happy family and, you know, a home and he's thriving and... There's nothing that he wants for. And so when that's true, and that was true for me too, I was very fortunate to be adopted by great parents and have a great family. But and then you had so but there's curiosities there, and I, you know, sometimes what can come with it, it did for me, was a guilt for feeling curious, like and not wanting to betray you, and your family. And I see all of that when I look at his, you know, and I think, is he going to feel that? And, you know, is he going to be okay with that, you know? Because it's a grapple. It's hard.
And this leads right into my next question beautifully, as we'll answer this and then we'll start to wind down. What words can you offer to the child, teen, or adult adoptee who might be struggling to sort things out around this part of their identity.
Yeah, it's perfectly natural to want to know. And don't ever think that that's not okay. It's okay to want to know. What you do with that is up to you. If you choose to go forward, there's no have to. There's no, oh, it's inevitable that you have to go find your birth parents. You may not want to. If you do choose to go forward with it, make sure that you've got people who really love you and care for you with you on the journey. Don't do it alone.
Yeah, to support, like you said, in case what's received on the other end is not, say, the experience that you received.
You don't know what you're going to find.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I don't mention my birth mother's name on this is because we're not in touch.
Okay.
And the end of the story wasn't good. When I reached out to try to meet her, she had talked to her family, her husband at the time, and made the decision that it wasn't right. And so we've never met.
Right. Okay. I don't know if I was aware of that. So, yeah. Is there anything you want to say before we start to kind of wind down? Anything you want to share that maybe we haven't been able to touch on that might be important as a part of this story?
I would say that, you know, the story of Norm and I is a great story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still hard for me.
Yeah.
Okay. I lost my father, 11 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
My adopted father. And Norm and I continue to grow closer. And one of the things that I struggle with is I never want to replace my father because I love him dearly. And it's complicated for me. What does Norm, who is he, what role is he in my life? And, I'm getting better at it, but it's work.
Okay.
It's work. And I know it's hard on him to see me struggle with
right.
it, because he has a lot of love for me, and I appreciate that about him. Yeah.
All right, so we're going to wind down with some statements that I'm going to ask you to finish. First thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Do the best I can.
Okay, do the best you can. That's all we can ask.
That's it.
I notice.
I don't know. I'm happy that I did what I did.
I feel
more complete.
I wonder
what it would have been like to know sooner.
I hope
that I can find peace with my relationship with Norm.
I hope that for you too. Last question here. What I know to be true is?
What I know to be true is I'm better for having gone through it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So as we wind down, Jamie hasn't listened, but he's learning that this is how I end every one of my podcasts. And my listeners know this is a tribute to my father. You hear the story kind of in the beginning in the intro, and I end every podcast this way. When you love someone,
you pay attention.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Kathy.